Grazie Christophe dell'intervento. Vorrei riprendere alcuni temi e alcuni aspetti. Anzitutto la flessibilità e l'adattamento di questo modello organizzativo di conoscenza alle varie realtà nazionali, perché se è vero quello che diceva prima Rossella Caffo, che l'organizzazione del progetto nei tre paesi tutto sommato rispecchia lo stesso andamento, quindi vengono messe a fuoco le stesse realtà organizzative e elaborative che poi contribuiscono al progetto, è anche vero che nei diversi paesi l'organizzazione delle istituzioni che gestiscono il patrimonio culturale è diversa, e ancora più diversa è quella degli 11 paesi e degli altri che si aggiungeranno al progetto. Ma la forza dell'iniziativa è proprio quella di adattare uno stesso modello organizzativo a organizzazioni amministrative differenti. Questo è un valore importante che dimostra quanto sia stata intelligente la progettazione e l'avanzamento di questa progettazione. L'altro aspetto interessante dell'esposizione di Christophe è stato quello che ha riguardato l'interoperabilità tecnica e quindi non solo l'interoperabilità sui dati, ma anche proprio l'interoperabilità delle piattaforme. È venuto fuori come a partire dai diversi portali c'è appunto una leggibilità di tipo tecnico che poi diciamo facilita anche quello che lui pure ha toccato, il terzo punto, cioè quello della gestione nel futuro e quindi della sostenibilità finanziaria di questo strumento per i prossimi anni. Questo è uno strumento di lavoro, uno strumento di studio, uno strumento di ricerca che deve continuare, ma che deve continuare con risorse di gestione che non possono essere altissime. Nessuno Stato può permettersi investimenti nella gestione troppo alti. Gli investimenti vanno fatti sui contenuti. Quelli di gestione dovrebbero essere appunto ridotti. E con il modello realizzato, con il progetto realizzato e anche andando avanti nell'individuazione di un'associazione non profit che dovrà a regime gestire un portale come questo, certamente le risorse necessarie saranno assolutamente sostenibili da parte di tutti i paesi, soprattutto se i paesi diventeranno sempre di più. E su questo allargamento del progetto e sul futuro quindi dei servizi che attraverso il progetto Michael verranno resi ai cittadini europei ma non solo, chiedo l'intervento di David Dawson, che è appunto il rappresentante del Regno Unito, quindi di un paese fondamentale, che ha dato un contributo fondamentale alla costruzione del progetto, perché è proprio nella stessa definizione dell'istituzione di appartenenza musei, archivi e biblioteche del Regno Unito. Grazie.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for the invitation to come here to speak today. It's a real pleasure to be here. I'm going to be talking about the people that we're doing this for. We're not creating this European service just for our own purposes because we think it's fun and interesting, but when we created it, we had a range of user communities in mind, as you've heard already. And what I'm going to do is just to outline a couple of user case studies, a few examples of how people will be able to use Michael to help them in what they're doing online and to connect with their culture, with the culture of Europe in its diversity when in the real world as well. There are many different user communities who we think will engage with content that they will find through Michael. I've listed education, cultural tourism, research, and also organizations like the one that I work for in terms of trying to coordinate content and to try and look at how it's funded and sustained. But a very practical example, I'm going to start with a cultural tourist who happens to be visiting Tuscany. perhaps somebody who has a villa and is wanting to find out what's in the local area. Mikael at the moment has a fairly basic map-based search. That's something that we want to extend and develop because we think that people are very interested in places. It's one of the key drivers for them. One of the real areas that make people interested in using the internet and finding out about things and finding out about and researching their history. So this is something we'll be developing further. And searching on Tuscany, at the moment I find two resources in Mikael. Now, it's not very many. You know, in an ideal world, perhaps there might be 200 or 2,000, but they are absolutely fascinating. The first is a collection of aerial photographs, and perhaps the user who is going to on their holidays may be interested in finding out what's in the area around their villa. And this is the town of San Gimignano, which is one of the few sites that the person was aware of were nearby to the villa. And so they were able to find a site that would enable them to find out much more about the town and to find out why they should visit and what they should see when they get there. And secondly, someone may find it very difficult to find out information about the history of the locality they're visiting. Now, I know from personal experience that this is quite difficult when you know the organizational structures of the country where you live. You know that where there are archives, where there are museums, where there are libraries. But when you're visiting somewhere else, you don't know any of those things. And this was a website developed by the University of Siena, which has up a fascinating account of the history of Tuscany, and a fascinating three-page article about the history of the village close by the villa. So it's just how you bring these things together from sources that you'd have no idea that they existed. And I'm sorry to compare this to the sort of commercial world, but if you use Google, Google is fantastic. We all use it all the time. But unfortunately, sorry, I have to duck here. Where are we? If I search for the name of the village and for history, I have 612 references. And I can guarantee you that about 610 of them are about the history of the vineyard, which is one of the major features of the village, and anything that was about the history of the community, I actually couldn't find amongst those 600 listings. So how do you do research if you just find using the commercial search engines? It is actually quite difficult. And this is the role of Mikael. Now, we're not trying to suggest that Mikael will take over from Google and will, in 18 months' time, will be worth $1.2 billion or whatever YouTube was worth. You know, we're not trying to say that. What we're trying to say is that with Mikael, we are creating a targeted, specific search engine, something that enables you to find things that you're looking for. And the other huge opportunity is to work with the commercial sector, not to work against. So how much better for Google if the results that the users of Google are getting are coming from a quality assured site like Mikael. On the internet, nobody knows who you are. But we know from research with users that museums, libraries, and archives are well trusted. People think we're honest, decent, tell the truth sometimes, and that are reliable sources of evidence. That sort of thing is valuable. Valuable not just to the community and to our users, but also in a commercial world as well. So we can bring added value to the commercial search engines and enable people to find content, again, that is useful to them. A second scenario, an associate professor from Canada who is researching a topic about the history of their country. They use Mikael. They put in Canada, and they come back with, at the moment, a limited number of collections, but you start to look at the quality of what's coming back. This is a fascinating one. It's an information about a project on a totem pole that was carried out at a museum in Exeter. And again, just to pick up something that Christoph said earlier, One of the features that we've been able to implement is linking to automated search and automated translation mechanisms so that you can translate that into different languages. Now, the translation is not perfect. I'm sure it isn't. I see a few wry smiles in the audience. But as a user, it's better than nothing. And we've been able to, it's not rocket science, but we've been able to integrate this into the portal so that people can easily translate the content from one language into another. And then when they come down and actually look at the site, they see that this is a totem pole, and the website records the culmination of a project where the museum worked with the community in northern Canada to find out about the history of the totem pole. The group visited and explained to people in Exeter what the history and significance of the totem pole was for them. And as you can see from reading, perhaps, they conducted a ceremony actually within the museum. So a fantastic story there. And again, another record, fantastic collection of photographs, this time from France, about Canada in the early period. So, and again, automatic translation from French into English, so you can see how useful that is. And again, a website on America in France, again bringing together some very early resources. This is a joint project between the National Library in France, the French National Library, and the Library of Congress. And again, it enables you then to find really detailed information. This is now showing a real close-up of a map of a part of northeast Canada. Perhaps these are resources that a researcher would not know about. Certainly many of them are. Mikhail supports a whole range of different tools for researching and finding out things. So you can search by subject, for example, fricative art, brings back resources from many different places, many different countries, and it's fascinating to see the material that comes back. Okay, at this point, before I move on, I'd just like to show you a couple of things. The first is Mikhail running on a mobile phone or a BlackBerry. Something was mentioned this morning as something that was in the future. Well, you can search online now on a handheld device, so you can actually find culture right in front of you. And this is what the website looks like. This is it live now. You can see that today's collection is that of images from ICCD, which is in the building, which is amazing. And just to show you how the system works. Now, I'm trying to type this without a mouse, so I might be a little ham-fisted. But if we just see one or two of the things I've just shown you, here we have that list of sites about Canada, and we can find a number of different things. So, for example, here we have the Pitt Rivers Museum in Oxford, which has a fantastic collection of material from Canada. But there are a wide range of other tools as well. One of the ones that I think is most interesting is that of audience. In cataloguing these resources, these digital resources, we've asked people to think about the audience for which the website or the CD-ROM or the DVD, for who it was intended for. Now, often when you talk to people in cultural institutions, they have a very, very clear idea of who they are targeting projects at. And we can then use that because we can then think about how we can use this content in very different ways. So for example, if I click on formal education, we get back a list of projects and websites that were developed in order to support children's education in school. Now that really is quite important and quite valuable. Recently I've been on secondment with our Department for Education and Skills to see how we can better connect the cultural sector and learners of all ages, through from preschool, from the very youngest children, and we carry on learning for the rest of our lives. So that whole range. What this means is that we start to have a product where we can say, here is a way of finding out about Europe's cultural heritage, both in your own country and from across Europe. two things we're doing with this. The first is that my colleague Kate Fernie has been working on the project and delivered the UK side that you've seen so far. We're going to Belgium on Thursday to go and present the project to European SchoolNet and to a group of policymakers from the education community from across Europe. Again, so we can make this link between culture and education. And secondly, at a UK level, we are attending an exhibition which is attended by 28,000 teachers, IT coordinators, lecturers, people active in technology in the education sector. And we'll be using Mikael to highlight cultural sector content that we know from talking to them, which is what they want. The second stage of that is to build it into the technical developments that are taking place in the education world, so that the content from museums, libraries, and archives is surfaced in the tools that children and all learners are using in their everyday learning. Now, what else? Oh, yes. I knew there was something else. If I go back to the home page. Oh, I should show you quickly. This is the site in different languages. So I've clicked and you see the site is now in Italian. The sort of navigation tools around the screen and now, sorry, in French and now in Italian. Trying to think and click the mouse at the same time is never a good idea. And we have here, actually I'll change back to English so I know what I'm doing. I outlined in the earliest part of my talk with using some PowerPoint slides some sort of user scenarios, and we've written a few user journeys which explain some of the content that people will find and some of the learning journeys that people go through if they're using content. So you can see that my talk is sort of built on those user stories that highlight some of the best content from across Europe. And what else? The other thing, and I can't see it just now, but I'll just mention it, is we've also built in a couple of tools for developers, because we're aware that in the Web 2 world, creating a database and hoping that everybody will come to it isn't good enough. Two tools that have been built. The first is the ability to create a little icon and a search box that you can put on your own site that allows your users to search through the content of the European portal. And that can be built using a search that could be something if you are, for example, a museum specializing in East Africa, in art from Africa. You can pre-select the search, which is bringing up content that is related to the topic or the theme of your institution. Second tool is highlighting the OAI that the service will provide, that the metadata records from the service will be available to other services for reuse, for example, for education portals. So we built that thinking in right from the start. Now, in my talk, I'd just like to pick up from what Christophe was saying when I get there. Which is coming back to the theme of the European Digital Library. We've already heard what it will be, and we've already heard about the links between how there are sort of a number of components on which it will be based. I'd like to go back to another version of the diagram that Christophe showed, because as a user, I was interested in the things that I found from within Mikael, but it's the things that Mikael pointed me to and the content, the maps, the images, the photographs, the movies that Mikael enabled me to find at second hand. The vision for the European Digital Library needs that to be slightly different. There's a really important role here for Mikael, which is of being able to locate the databases and the content that is held by institutions. Because at the moment, finding the content that I displayed to you means going to a number of different websites and then doing a search within each of those websites. What I really wanted as a and I'm afraid it was me who was a visitor to that villa in Tuscany, what I wanted to be able to do was to click on a map and say, tell me what there is from within 15 kilometers of this point. Now to do that, we've got to go beyond the confines of current websites. We need to bring the content together in ways that are useful for users. And Mikhail plays a role as a catalogue of where the content is and what themes and subjects it can support. And that complements Tell. Tell at the moment is searching deep into the databases and is creating an overview of some digital collections. Mikhail is creating the catalogue of digital collections and is not yet, but we very much hope that it will search down into the content itself to bring those together into what will then be the European Digital Library. In order to do that, we have a number of things to achieve, not least of which is cross-searching in terms of the terminologies different people use, and then presenting the results in ways that are interesting to users in terms of tackling the translation issues and also the terminologies that are used. But I think that the really interesting thing about Mikhail is that it starts to build a pool of quality assured content. And as I said, I think quality is absolutely critical on the internet. And Mikhail now has a critical mass that means that it's a brilliant platform for going forward. So that's all I wanted to say. I'd like to thank you very much for listening, and particularly to thank all our colleagues in the Mikhail and Mikhail Plus projects who have enabled us to get here, particularly the software developer. And I'd also like to thank the translators for doing such a wonderful job today. Thank you.